Hello, everyone. Let's bring the July 11th City Council meeting to order. All council members are present, and we'll begin with a moment of silence. Okay, thank you. Our Pledge of Allegiance tonight is going to be led by someone from our fire department. We have Bill Murphy, who is a paramedic and engineer. Bill, would you please come up?
Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So I guess I'm supposed to say a little something about myself
now?
Yeah,
just tell us a little bit about you and what you do.
Sure. So my name's Bill Murphy. I've worked for the city now full-time for about a little over a year and a half. Prior to that, I had about 6 years cumulative experience as a volunteer for the city before I got hired full-time. And that was a ways back when I was going to Cal Poly. My wife and I moved back down here, so 3 years ago now. We're expecting our first child in November, and we're happy to be in the area.
Well, that's exciting. Great. Thank you very much, Bill.
Thank you.
Okay. Announcements. I don't have a whole lot tonight. Isn't that exciting? I would like to say that the 4th of July, it was really interesting. As everyone knows, we're having to cut back on some of our event support within the city. And 4th of July was primarily handled. Very proud of that. It was a wonderful show. I think everyone had a great time. And I think it sort of sets the tone for the rest of our public events that we're going to be handling more with volunteers, with city support, but mostly volunteers. And as expected, I knew we could do that. We have a great volunteer base. Can always depend on them. And the other thing that I wanted to just announce is that it is mosquito season, and the whole West Nile virus situation, just a little bit of information, which we always knew that they were rather pesty things, but a female mosquito lays 100 to 300 eggs at a time and averages 1,000 to 3,000 during their lifespan. Depending on temperature, mosquitoes develop from egg to adult in as little as 4 to 7 days. And the reason I'm saying this is because all of you may have breeding grounds that you don't know about. Standing water in places like ornamental ponds, water gardens, bird baths, water troughs, gutters, pool covers, plant saucers, right. All of those things can be a breeding ground. It doesn't take much room. It doesn't take much water. So please be aware of that as you tend to your gardens and take care of your yards to not, you know, an old tire that's leaning against a wall can collect water. So be careful. Make sure that you don't provide a breeding ground for the mosquitoes. On a chair back there, there's a couple of folders that have further information about this if anyone is interested. Ken Vesterfeld is being my Vanna White and showing the folders. Okay. That was all the announcements I had. Anybody else? Bill?
Just to follow up on two things that you've noted, I too want to thank everyone involved for the 4th of July. It was very successful. I especially want to thank the fundraising committee and those people who donated, and the people who turned the volunteers that we needed this year because of having to pick up the load without as much city support. And so it was a tremendous success. It's going to be around next year. We might as well all plan on that, and you're going to be hearing from me again in a few months about helping with donations. As a follow-up to the mosquito thing, I was told yesterday, as a matter of fact, by somebody who's involved in the abatement project, that who also is a great winemaker, incidentally, but that there are areas around here, especially the south end of the community, the estuary and the flats area, that are just ripe with mosquitoes, and they're going to be a big problem this year.
Melody?
And all of her volunteers and workers who put on the Rock to Pier run, I think she's going to comment about a record number of participants this year. And then also, I'd like to compliment Rick Algert and Andrea Luker for appearing on this DVD that showed up in all of our mailboxes. You can also get this at the public libraries, and this is about coastal recreation in San Luis Obispo County. And I, especially, Andrea, I'd like to thank you for the way you finessed a little bit and talked more about the town than just about Coleman Beach. I thought that was well done. Very good promotion. Anyway, that's in the library, so people can check that out. And I hear it's running on Cablecast Channel 20, I believe, or 21, through the month.
Great. Betty?
My light's not coming on.
Try talking to the mic, see if maybe it's just the light.
Is it on?
No.
Okay.
Thank you. I just have two announcements, and if the camera attendant would mind, the little one on top has to do with those of you who ride the Amtrak, to let you know if you want to take that, if you are taking the Amtrak sometime this summer, that you can take the bus over there for free to pick it up. You don't have to leave your car over there. They will give you a free stub, and you can also have a return free ticket back. So there's a phone number on there. You may not be able to see it, but if you call Amtrak, they'll tell you about it, or SLOCOG in San Luis. And then if the camera attendant could take off the little piece of paper, or Mike, thank you. Underneath is a date for a meeting in Cayucas this Thursday. It's a very important meeting. It starts at 6 o'clock. It's in the Vets Hall, and David could maybe enlarge it, but if not, what's happening is about a year ago, some water district came over and said they were interested in dumping selenium and other toxic kind of water into our Estero Bay. And everyone kind of told them we didn't want that, and they went away, and now they're back. And we're one of six options that they are considering to dump this water into pipe over here and dump into Estero Bay. So there's an official meeting, official public comment. There will be a court reporter at this meeting if anyone wants to come and speak between 6 and 8 this Thursday at the Cayucas Vets Hall. There is a report in every library that documents the kind of information you may want to read before you come.
And that. Okay. Good evening, Mayor Peters and council members. Karen Sweeney, Recreation and Parks. As Councilmember DeMeritt mentioned, we had the Rock to Pier run this weekend, and we had a record number of entrants, 868 people registered, which is up about 200 from last year. We had only 39 no-shows, and I don't have all the registration records from Friday afternoon through Saturday because that went with the timing company, but we had 598 people pre-registered as of noon on Friday. 323 of them were from outside of San Luis Obispo County, or 54%, and 8 of those were from out of state. This year we also did online registration, and about 50% of the online registration was done online, so that helped us a lot on our manpower at the Recreation and Parks Department. Revenue raised from this event was $20,200. That's just from revenue from registration and T-shirts, and I don't have all the expense numbers in yet, but I'll get those in as soon as I can. The overall male winner completed the 6-mile course in 31 minutes and 53 seconds, and that was J.J. Duke out of Tempe, Arizona. And the overall female winner, was Jill Boaz, and I believe she's from Los Osos. It's 35 minutes and 38 seconds, so that they were quite speedy, almost beat me to the finish. And I just want to say thank you to all the people that helped put on this event. Culligan Kitsman Water here from Morro Bay donated all the water. We had Albertsons of Morro Bay donated fruit. The House of Bread from San Luis Obispo donated bread for everybody. Dr. Karen Allen from Templeton donated sunscreen. Brian Waterbury, who founded the race, died from melanoma a couple years ago, so she provided sunscreen for everybody. 3 Ink Screen Printing in Morro Bay did our T-shirts, which were a great design. So if anyone wants to see those, sorry. And we had Roger Evie in Morro Bay Four Square Church did volunteers that helped us all along the way. And Recreation Park staff did a great job, and Councilmember DeMeritt helped me do the awards at the finish. So all in all, it was a great event, and look forward to doing it next year. So thank you. Thank you.
I'm Betty Forsyth, proud resident of Morro Bay, and I'm with my little elves here, Kathy Novak and Keith Taylor, because we're having Christmas in July this Saturday from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Morro Bay Library to think about. So we need all the support we can give to our library. We thank you, and come on down. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Louise Barkas of Morro Bay, 640 Sequoia Court, and I just want to preface my statement with how wonderful I think the fire department is. Actually, they saved my life last October, so I have no qualms with the fire department. But I do want to say that the yard next to mine is a there's no building on it. It's just a weedy lot, and it's a 2980 Ironwood. And on June the 15th, I believe, was the date that all weeds had to be cut down in the yards. And this one is still going strong. They must be, you know, with all the rain they grew very high, and they must be 3 to 5 feet high. And I have to say that July the 4th, I stayed home. I was there with a water hose waiting for a spark to light the weeds. Thank God it didn't. But I think that this is going to be a terrible fire season, and we do have to worry about weed abatement. And if we need to take a stronger stand on that, I'd like to see these weeds cut down. And if there's a way that the city council can come up with to make this happen, I would appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll make sure that that gets taken care of. You got the address, Mike? Okay. All right.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council members. My name is Ann Reeves. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm here tonight to speak on health insurance for all Californians. And I do this in honor of my friend Andy Stevenson. Senate Bill SB 840, sponsored by State Senator Sheila Kuehl, has been passed by the State Assembly on July 5th, 2005, by a vote of 9-4. SB 840 would provide health insurance benefits to every Californian while preserving the right to choose your own doctor. It will enable California to save billions of dollars in administrative costs, making it possible to offer every resident the comprehensive benefits outlined in the bill. Consumers would pay, and most of the bankrupt people were working and were insured at the time their illness occurred. Presently, Health Care for All is asking for your support, your $20 or your thumbs up, or both. Their website is www.healthcareforall.org. And you can also let Mr. Maldonado and Mr. Blakesley know what your feelings are on this bill. Excuse me. At the beginning of my statement, I mentioned my friend Andy Stevenson. He was a national advocate for fair and honest voting, asking for verifiable ballots. I only know him from online. In May, he became ill. He had no insurance, and he needed a specific operation called a Whipple procedure performed at Johns Hopkins Hospital. In 11 days online, we raised the $50,000 it took to get him admitted to that hospital. We raised it $10 and $20 at a time. He survived the surgery, but unfortunately last Thursday night he passed away. It is in his honor that I am going to work for Health Care for All, because no one in this country should have to beg for medical help or lose their life because they don't have it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Linda Merrill, North Morro Bay. I'd like to speak on B3, the resolution intention to sell the property at Coral in San Jacinto. The intention of the property was to provide a much-needed second fire station for North Morro Bay.
Yeah, that is a public hearing, Linda.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
I'd like to speak on D1 then.
Okay, you can do that.
D1, consideration of project regarding new revenue programs, and I'd just like to ask if you would ask whoever knows the answer how the funding would be handled on that. And also on D2, report on planning, division, workload, and adoption of work program. I'd like to say that this change of policy amounts to a lot less of public participation. An erosion of public input is not what the voters asked for in the last election. The planning department is still acting as though we haven't had a change in council. So I would like you all to go very slowly into approving this policy change. I think we do need...
And I really would wish that some of you people would start compromising for the city. I'm seeing deals go down that really irritate me. We're taking prime C1 property in our town and putting houses on it with the theory that if we build houses, there'll be people. Well, look at the theory and look around our business district. It's all residential. There are 10,000 people living here already. Putting more people here without doing something with our resource that we have, and our resources kind of stalled right now. We're at a point in time where we can turn this resource and make it work for us, the citizens of the town, not a handful of people that want to build luxury condos and a lot of houses on property that should be business. We don't need businesses now. That's what I hear from the majority up there. I say, well, how can you look at the future without having a core of business? You want to hook Embarcadero to the old town. You're putting condominiums in our prime real estate. You're not going to convert real estate back into businesses. I mean, it's just not going to happen. The other thing was, you know, another compromise issue. Adding police to our budget, congratulations for a balanced budget, by the way. But there are things missing in that budget that really should irritate every person in this town, and that's our roads. Was there a nickel in that budget for our roads? I don't think so. I mean, that's being pushed aside in favor of paranoid people that think they need this huge police department for some sort of false protection. $100,000 over for a policeman. Well, you had the opportunity to take advantage of the police that weren't there. And I appreciate our police department, but I really don't see that much crime. I've been in this area since 79. How many times have our police officers had to use their guns? I mean, you can count them on your hands, perhaps. Now, I know there's a lot of paranoia out there, but I'm tired of paying for it with my streets. I have to go drive around and miss these potholes all over the place. I live on a hill. Our streets are growing grass. You live up there, Mr. Pierce. You know what I'm talking about. This is ridiculous. Under our water tank on Elena, the street's been rotting for years. You put some tar on top of it to make us believe it was fixed. It's a mess. Our streets are a mess. There's no money being budgeted. This other stuff's more important. And to me, as a citizen, it's not more important.
Of our fire department. This really shows us, the community that is, that you listen and you care about our safety. I'm sure you will continue to help us achieve our goal for a complete new fire department. Just like to say thank you again. And I think you guys are doing a good job. Even though sometimes I get really upset with you, that's a good thing. Okay? Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. Roger Ewing, Morro Bay resident, citizen. I'd like to address item D1. It's asking, staff is requesting that you somehow find $50,000 to fund another consultant to determine how we can raise money to pay for certain items that weren't included in this budget that you just passed. Until you have a balanced budget and until the basic needs of the citizenry are met, I urge you, please, to delay trying to find $50,000. I don't know where you're going to find $50,000, to be honest with you. I don't think we need a consultant at this time. There are plenty of very highly qualified citizens in our community that I think would be willing to lend their expertise if asked. And I don't think they would require $50,000 to give you an answer. So please use some common sense, some basic economic common sense, and delay spending $50,000 for a consultant that I don't think we need at this time. Thank you very much. Have a good meeting.
Thank you.
I assume we're waiting for something to come up.
The Morro Bay Merchants Association wants you to know, shopping in Morro Bay has never been better or easier. You'll find a wider variety of merchandise and services everywhere you look in Morro Bay. Businesses owned and operated by your friends and neighbors. That means great selection on competitive prices, with free and easy parking all over town. And if the sign on the window says member, Morro Bay Merchants Association, come on in and say hi. They're always pleased to see and serve you with a genuine friendly that's rock solid.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, members of the council. I'm here on behalf of the Morro Bay Merchants Association this evening. I'd like to tell you a little bit about it.
And you are?
Every year, the Merchants Association puts on two street fairs.
I'm sorry, you didn't say your name.
John Barton.
Thank you.
Thank you. Every year, money, but it's some money. They also get sales tax generated at the event. They also get sales tax generated around the event at the grocery store, the restaurant, the gasoline station that the people coming to the event go and spend their money at. And then they also get transient occupancy tax from the vendors that come to the fair and spend nights here. So the city generates all this kind of revenue directly as a result of the fair. The Morro Bay merchants spend 70% of their budget on advertising the city to the rest of the county. That commercial you saw ran over 500 times in this county on charter cable. It was paid for by the merchants with revenues from this fair. These ad and the income that will be generated when these commercials run, which they run later in the year to encourage people to come from other places in the county, will also create sales tax revenue and, you know, the money that people come and spend here. So the city gets a second kick out of it. So what I'd like you to remember when you start cracking down, if you will, on local nonprofit organizations with city fees is that what they really are, in this case, it's the goose that lays the golden egg. And my suggestion to the city is don't kill the goose that lays the golden egg with excessive fees. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vestavelle, resident. The person was speaking up here before about weed abatement. I'd like to again speak to you about car abatement. As you know, and I know some of the council members are directly involved with passing cars that are abandoned. It is growing. On Saturday alone, I think the police department tagged another 8 vehicles that are abandoned on the street. Some of these cars are even, their license plates are taken from them, so it's very hard to get down there and to find out who their registered owner is. Due to the city budget, there are no funds for that. But all it takes is, of course, through the proper procedure of notification, is $65. If we could even find $650 within the city budget, we could get rid of 10 of these cars here. Or if people could donate. I think one of the council people before spoke and heard about a group of neighbors got together, had a barbecue, and they had a car towed that had been sitting there for months and months. Some of these cars, when you drive by, you will see them. They are sitting there for months. I know of one vehicle that was tagged on Saturday that was there for over 8 months that I knew of, and probably before that. So if there's any way we could help get rid of the blight, and it is a growing blight, you'll see them. They're damaged. Windows are broken, etc. If there's anybody, I know there's no discretionary funds left. Y'all donated that, I believe, to the budget here, which we appreciate. So all you can do is call the police department if you want to do that, or phone City Hall if you want to donate. One of the other things I'd like to speak about is I respectfully listen to people when they speak, and some people don't think that the police department is needed. On Saturday, there was one arrest. Officer was busy with that. There was another call here with DUIs. Don't have licenses, don't have insurance. Until it hits you or hits your neighbor, then you will want the police department. Back to the abandoned vehicles. That's going to be down on the low totem pole for the officers, because now we are short-staffed with officers. I appreciate it. Have a good evening. Thanks.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, we'll bring it back to council. Anybody have any comments on public comments? No? Okay.
I will shortly. Yes. Sherwin. Okay. This thing about the abandoned vehicles, I share Mr. Vesterveld's concern about that. $65, it's easy enough for me to pay that, and I tried to get a car towed out of my neighborhood, but the problem is that Chuck's Towing tows it to a mechanic shop in town, and that mechanic told me there's no more space there. So what we need to find is space, or we need to pay a higher fee to get it all the way to a junkyard, apparently. So it's more complicated than just the money or just a phone call. We have to tow it, and then we have to put it on somebody's lot, and that somebody is filled up, and it's a growing problem.
I know a friend of mine tried to take a car over even to San Luis, and they wouldn't take it. They were full. So now that was about a year ago, so could be it's changed. But, yeah, it is a problem. The moral is don't abandon your cars. Okay, we can actually go to our consent calendar. So anybody want to pull any? Oh, I'm sorry. Future agenda items. Any council members have a future agenda item?
I would. I would like to agendize the memo that Planning Commission passed to us with a definition of what open space is to them and put that on the next meeting.
Okay.
If anyone else is.
Yeah, I'd support that.
All right. So that's three of us, so we would like that back. With a staff report. Anything else? Thad? Bill?
No.
Melody?
I'm hearing from some of the people, some of the residents who live by the creeks and on creek maintenance. And I know that staff, particularly Frank Cunningham, has been working hard with them. And we recently got a copy of the letter that was sent out to them, surveying them for some ideas on how to take care of this. There are large expenses involved with clearing the creek beds. Apparently, work out some kind of a good agreement that could work for the city and for these residents as well.
Okay. Do I have a second person who wants to support that?
Sure.
And I will as well. I know they have had public meetings on it, and they have been fairly well noticed and everything, but they wouldn't get the kind of coverage that we get here, so it's good to have that information out. Okay. And
Mayor, yes. Word contract reminds me. I would like to agendize a discussion about to have the council look at having a policy where they would review department head contracts as we do all contracts. Not that we would negotiate that, others negotiate that, but that we would have a stamp of approval on that, or at least have the discussion of whether we want to have input into that.
I see our city attorney reaching for his microphone.
You can do that. You can have that discussion. It would require an ordinance change. We're a mayor, we're a council city manager type as opposed to other jurisdictions that you're in charge of the department heads. That's what you're looking at, a complete policy change where you'd be in charge of the department head contracts.
You'd have contracts, but not, yeah, just not completely in charge. I don't think I'm looking at that, but you know how we review contracts whenever they come up, and you ask us for input, but everybody else does the work?
Usually when you review them, there's lots of contracts you don't review if they're not within your purview, so and that's why the department head contracts aren't. They're not something that, you know, in other words, it's not the same as any other employee within the city where you're in charge of hiring and firing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a policy. Sure, you know, you can look at the policy, and it would be an ordinance change because it's underneath our city manager's duties and responsibilities.
Okay.
All right. Do we have support for that from?
Well, could I just get a little bit more background, being kind of a new person here? So, as a routine, City Council has not reviewed these or seen what kind of compensation or benefit packages we're offering.
The compensation's set, but as far as the terms and conditions of each contract, no. Not since I've been here, I don't believe the council's seen those
council
or reviewed those.
City Council has had no say in those things. They get negotiated and council doesn't okay them, or?
Just my contract and Bob's. Those are the direct contract relationships that you have. All the other employees, just as you don't review the compensation from the maintenance worker three that might be hired, it's...
Well, Madam Mayor, members of the council has set compensation bands for the executives, even though the contracts are individual. There are adopted and have historically had five-step in range compensation bands adopted by council. More recently, we have a banding process which does not describe five steps within the band, but those are adopted by the council, as are the general parameters around fringe benefits and that sort of thing.
And how long has it been since we've looked at those?
I think the last time the contracts were renewed was in 2002.
Okay.
I think it was 2002. There are some differences because several department heads have been hired since the time those contracts were redone, and so those dates are based on the hiring dates of the individuals that we were able to recruit.
Okay. So it seems reasonable that we would just review them once again and see if we want to keep the same compensation levels. Does that sound?
I'd support a discussion.
Okay.
Of this, sure.
All right. So that's three things. Bill, did you have anything?
No.
Okay. All right. Now we will go to our consent calendar. Did anyone want to pull anything from consent?
Yes, I would. I would.
You'd
like.
You'd disappoint me if you didn't.
I do have a question on A3, and I see Mr. Keogh's here. Wouldn't want him to not get a chance to speak.
Okay, anybody else want to pull anything? Okay, then I hear a motion approving A1 and A2.
So move.
Second.
Okay. Did you want to pull something, Melody?
Yeah. I just wanted to ask a question on A3, sorry.
Well, that's pulled. Being pulled.
Oh, okay.
That's being
sorry.
Pulled. We're
right.
A1 and A2.
Excellent.
Do I hear a second?
I said second.
Oh, okay, sorry. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, A3, Biddy.
My first question is the upshot of our letter to, this is in regard to the city's response to the grand jury investigation of the wastewater treatment plant. It sounds like it's a fairly routine thing that they do, that they review public agencies periodically, and it was like our turn, and they gave us good marks. Will we get to see a copy of the Slo County's responses to the findings and recommendations?
I'm not really all that familiar with how it works. Maybe the city manager, the attorney, could help us out.
I think these reports are interim reports and so are not a part of the final grant. What they would do is take our response, in our case, I guess our specific case, and create they would amend their findings in whatever way they thought appropriate, and that would then be their final report.
Okay. And then before the other council members comment, I just would say that part of their findings was the fact that we do distribute a million gallons of water into the ocean that could be reclaimed, and this certainly speaks to what we've decided to do, which is go tertiary and hopefully reclaim some of that water, which apparently, if everyone doesn't know, is one of our primary ways of dealing with our water plan. I did have a question about that. They do criticize us for not having a comprehensive water policy, and I know that Mr. Keogh addresses that in here by quoting some of the policies, but I wonder if we still don't need something else that they're asking for.
Well, I guess I'd be open for input on that one item. Perhaps Mr. Ambo can help me with some language. Or I've talked to Bill Boucher about it, and I pretty much just figured if the city does and has touted reclamation as a high priority, and that's what I tried to convey in the letter.
Okay, Melody, you had a question too?
I wanted to compliment Bruce on his work here, and also I was wondering if you wanted to comment briefly about your kind of behind the scenes work you're doing on the plant upgrade to let the public know that things are kind of moving along behind the scenes.
Yeah, at the present time, we're planning to meet with the regional board on Friday for sort of a kickoff discussion on the time schedule, and at the same time, I'm starting to put a draft RFP together for the facilities plan so we can start that part of the project and get that moving, and I think that'll help facilitate discussions with the sanitary district about some of the issues we've identified, such as financing and cost sharing and capacity rights and all that good stuff.
Okay.
I would move A3.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, we'll take a short break and then we'll start our public hearings at 7 o'clock.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. As Mayor indicated, this is an appeal of a Planning Commission decision to deny a project. Just a real fresher memory here. It's at the corner of Main, Driftwood, and Morrow. It's a vacant lot, half a block there. This is that slide looking at that property. The Council should focus their discussion on the grounds of the appeal, which was to deny the project based on the appropriate mix of residential to commercial. And so I put together a slide here. It shows just some percentages if it got to that point of whether it was within the site, within the building itself, or within maybe the ground floor of the units. If the council makes a motion that passes where they agree with the Planning Commission and agree that the mix is inadequate, then the project stops here. If the council makes a motion and it passes that the mix is adequate, then the next step is for the council to decide on the entirety of the project itself, and at that point the council can decide to take action on that or continue the project back to the Planning Commission for further discussion. With that is my presentation. If there's any questions about the numbers on the slide or any other questions, please feel free to ask them.
Okay, questions for staff? No, we're going to have a public comment first. All right, this is a public hearing. Those of you interested in speaking on this, please come forward. Oh, I'm sorry, we do have an applicant first. Yes, you may make your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Council. George Garcia with Garcia Architecture and Design. It's a pleasure to be back here. Again, just as a quick recap, I'm going to go through a quick presentation. This project was before you in the spring. I don't exactly know the date, but as staff mentioned, at that time we had proposed some more affordable housing pursuant to Assembly Bill 1818. There was quite a bit of discussion amongst yourselves regarding how the project would dovetail with the affordable housing clauses in 1818, and at that point this council referred back to Planning Commission for further discussion, potential redesign, and really clarification of the affordable housing components, incentives, and whatnot. So we went back to Planning Commission, and unfortunately the discussion went on and roundabout and ended up with a discussion not about the items that you wanted them to discuss, but really about project summary. We have a mixed-use project, 5 single-family residences on an R2 portion. The remainder mixed-use is comprised of 16 one-bedroom or workforce housing type units over about 1,800 square feet of commercial. And again, the site plan, one thing to note that has changed since the last time, we had quite a bit of discussion about open space, and one of the concessions that we are asking for pursuant to 1818 is a waiver of some open space. However, in redesigning it, and actually based on a lot of things, including comments from Planning Commission, we included an additional outdoor area, public recreation area, as we're calling it, in this area, sacrifice some parking to provide that extra open space, and I'll get more into that as we go through the slides here. Again, just another color slide showing the amount of landscaping that is being provided and this, again, community open space, which we added as an amenity to the project. And again, to refresh your memory, the design concept is to break up the mass of the buildings into smaller, more manageable buildings, keep it underneath the height allowance, and to break down the buildings to allow see-through through and around the project itself. One thing I wanted to note, because I believe it did come up last time, was the height allowance. We're allowed 30 feet on the C1R4 portion.
The units that are designed are only two-story, and as you can see, we're about 25 feet here, whereas this line represents the actual height that the building mass could be. So we're, again, trying to be sensitive in terms of architectural design to not maximize the amount of density and mass, but to be sensitive to the site that is primarily commercial, or excuse me, residential along Main and transitional along the other areas. And again, an elevation of both the Main Street and Driftwood views. Very quickly, I want to go through visual analysis. This is something Planning Commission wanted. These are quickly before and after views of the site, before and after, with project massing. Again, concern about views across and through the project. And we go to the next one. This is a before and after looking from Driftwood and Main. Again, massing, trying to break it up, individual buildings versus long, linear buildings. The next slide shows from Main Street looking towards the Rock, before and after, looking through the parking, through the residential. And then one looking from Driftwood West, again, towards the Rock. We have some of the apartment units here, and then the single family as we step down the hill. And then I think finally last, looking from Moore Avenue south, 1818, to how we can actually get units on the very low income, which is really more appropriate. And so what the project now does is it provides 10% of the units, or two of the workforce housing one-bedroom units, as affordable under 1818, and hence we are asking for two concessions to go along with the provision of those two affordable units. And the two concessions are the waiver of the community open space for the R2 portion, and then a adjustment in the parking standards. Again, those were held over from last time, and I'll quickly go through those two items here. The waiver that we're asking for would be for the community open space here, and again, not to belabor it, the project was designed, at least on this end, the west end, as single-family homes, not condominiums or any other high density. The idea is that we truly have a diversity in our housing product, and that we have single-family homes here, we have one-bedroom units here above commercial to provide a true mixed use. And again, the idea is that instead of providing a community space, common space for single family, most people that are buying a single family home would expect a front yard, side yards, rear yards, etc. So these have been designed more as a single family product. However, one thing we did redesign and add to the project, which is new, is again this community open space. And the discussion, again, from both this council and Planning Commission was that the apartment dwellers or the apartment renters probably benefit more from a recreation area. So what we did is took some of the parking area that was here, converted it into lawn, greenscape, potentially to use either singly or commonly by all the inhabitants of the residential one-bedroom units. So that was something new for this project. And again, here's a little character sketch of how that would look, people occupying the space on a daily basis or a weekend. And even with the loss of a few parking spaces here, pursuant to 1818, this graph shows that the required parking for the entire project is about 33 spaces, and we are, in fact, providing 37 spaces, even taking over some of the parking to give over to this recreation open space area. And last, I want to talk about the reason we're here tonight is the appeal from Planning Commission. The discussion from the, again, Planning Commission would had to do with the ratio or the mix, if you would, of commercial to residential. And I just put up here for the findings for denial. Item A talks about the proposed project does not provide the adequate commercial residential unit mix. Item B talks about basically the same thing. And there was a lengthy discussion about the what was an appropriate mix given this mixed-use area A. And so what we've done is come up with a couple alternatives so we can go through. The first slide shows the residential floor, if in fact there was more commercial that was felt warranted for the project. And again, this would be something that would be a shell building perhaps for one or two occupants. This, again, is an idea of how this could be applied for a tenant improvement, three offices, accessible restroom, administration area for a travel agent, something like that, that would also fall in line with the visitor serving overlay. This is 100% commercial. The next slide, again, shows an option. Maybe there's a 50-50 split in which one person said, I really want a second-story office, and someone else said, I really want a second-story apartment. Again, true live work, or excuse me, true mixed use integration. In this case, the downstairs would be all commercial, and here we would have one apartment and one commercial space. And then the next slide is even going out a little bit further in terms of live-work. I know the city doesn't have a live-work policy in hand. However, there is, and we're seeing more demand for this type of flex space live-work. This is how a potential live-work situation could look. Again, for an art, graphic artist, computer tech person who maybe wants to have a live-work scenario where the space would be occupied by one or two people, and there would be an area for live-work here and the live area back here. So again, looking at various options on how we could actually obtain more commercial if that is what truly, in fact, the market is looking to bear. And I think that's it. Again, looking at the appeal item, was really back here on the mix of commercial residential, even though this council asked the Planning Commission to look at other items as pursuant to 1818. I think we've hit on the fact that the two concessions we're asking for, because we're providing the very low units now as opposed to the moderate, those concessions we feel are appropriate for the project. In addition to that, we looked at, again, the potential for adding more commercial to the project if that is something that this council feels that it's warranted to do. And that's a lot of information for you. I'd be happy to answer any and all questions that you have. Also, the applicant is in the audience to be able to answer any questions as well.
Okay, any questions?
Yeah, I've got a couple.
Melody,
okay. I know Planning Commission expressed some concern not only about the size or the percentage of the commercial, but the look of it on Main Street. And as I was looking, as you were going through these slides, I don't think you have actually a view or an idea, or is it in these drawings that shows me the size of those windows? You know how they talk about the size of the windows in terms of could somebody go by window shopping? Mm-hmm. Do you have anything that could show us a view from the east on Main Street? Just
in this case, this is Main Street. Again, looking between the two commercial buildings here on the lower floor, parking in between. And this, in fact, could be what I would consider storefront or shopfront, this large window here as well as this one. These look into the commercial spaces themselves. So depending on if it's commercial office, in this case, if we're looking at commercial retail, a retailer would have some opportunity to display their wares in a retail setting, display their product. Although we think, given the location, it's probably going to be more visitor-serving, commercial office, that type of thing. But there would be an opportunity if a retailer really wanted to be in the spot to have some visibility on Main Street with the large windows.
I was also wondering, when you talk about the top floor, how much additional square space to commercial is contained in the top floor? Is the bottom floor larger than the top floor, or are they the same?
The top floors are actually larger because part of them cover over parking. So the downstairs, approximately two buildings, 900 square feet each, hence we get our 1,800 square feet. The upstairs is approximately another, a little bit more than double that because of the over parking that we obtain if we were to convert the upstairs to all commercial.
A little bit more than doubles the 1,800 up to?
Probably another 2,400.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions?
I have one.
Dan?
You mentioned two variable mixed-use options that you just presented to us.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to make the decision on those options?
The idea is that, again, nobody knows what the market is going to be in 2 years and 5 years whenever these units are built. And just like a retail space below, the idea is the project would be built out as a shell building. And the owner would enlist the services of a realtor or a broker to find out what interest is there, if it's, again, a travel agent or some other type of office-type business or retail in this case. And it's very common for someone to come in and say, I want to rent this space. I'll do, example, a five-year lease, but I need, you know, another bathroom or I need an office in the back. And so we'll do an improvement plan based on that tenant's needs. So converting the upstairs to commercial is no different than how the downstairs would function. It would basically be market-driven. If a tenant comes in and says, I would like your entire downstairs on building one, for example, but I need two offices, a reception area, break room, what have you, then the owner would work with that tenant to provide a tenant improvement plan for the build-out of that inside-driven. It's whatever the market demands. If in 2 years we need a lot more commercial, there's a lot more demand for commercial along the Main Street corridor, we have that option to do that.
The only other way to make the mix more compatible would be, instead of trying to increase the commercial usage, would be to decrease the residential usage. Have you considered that?
That could be an option as well.
Have you considered it?
We have not, because again, I think if it all goes residential, we lose the mixed-use component of the project, and the primary zoning, I think, requires at least some commercial. The C1R4 requires some commercial, and it is a mixed-use Area A zone, so we do have to provide some amount of commercial. And it is the big challenge of how much, what is the ratio, what is appropriate, because it is somewhat of a gamble based on a speculative type project. If you have an owner who says, I need 2,000 square feet of office space, that's pretty easy. In this case, we're designing a project that is truly speculative mixed-use, and what we're trying to do is provide a building that's flexible enough that, again, the market will drive the uses, the ultimate users and or tenants, so that we have a project that is hopefully full and not one that is, you know, which is struggling to find tenants. That's, to me, good design is to be able to provide a project that has that built-in flexibility.
So in the final analysis, your 1,821 square foot commercial, you're comfortable with that? You could live with that?
Correct. Correct.
Even if the residential was reduced? Even if the residential portion was reduced.
Reduced or turned over to commercial?
No. Simply reduced in the number of square footage.
Square footage would probably be okay. I'm not sure I understand the question. If you're asking to reduce the number of units?
There are two ways to make this project more compatible in some people's minds in terms of the amount of square footage for commercial and the amount of square footage for residential. You have said that the 1,821 square foot commercial is a comfortable figure for you. What would be a comfortable figure to reduce the 16 single family or single bedroom apartments to make the compatibility more in the liking of some of the citizens?
Again, based on the scenarios that we went through, the worst case would be to convert buildings A and B, the first buildings on Main Street, to 100% commercial. In that scenario, we'd be losing four residential units. Four of the workforce housing residential units would be given over to commercial. In this case, we would have 2,400 square feet plus the 18 total.
I'll go first. That way I can go home and have my din-din. Roger Ewing again, Morro Bay Citizen. I'm opposed to the project, so I am here to urge you to deny the appeal and uphold the Planning Commission's decision. This is in a visitor-serving zone, and yet there's nothing in this project relating to visitor-serving currently as it's presented. Also, this is the sixth hearing this project is getting before either you, the previous council, previous planning commission, current planning commission. And not once has any citizen in Morro Bay come up and spoken to a body in favor of this project. Everybody seems to be opposed to it. He, other than removing the setback back to 20 feet, there is no major change to this project in all this time that we've been coming before you on it. It's still basically the same project. In a mixed-use zone, I see with visitor-serving overlay, this is the wrong project. It is too massive. He is now saying he will give us open space, but we're going to lose parking. There wasn't enough parking on this project to begin with, realistically speaking. On paper, and according to the planning staff, maybe yes. But in the real world, there isn't. Because every one-bedroom apartment usually has two people. Not every, but most. So that's two cars, but there's only one parking space. He plans on having shared parking for the commercial. That has already been proven not to work. It creates all kinds of antagonism because somebody staying overnight may not want to get up at 8 in the morning to move the car for the commercial parking spot. And so the commercial parking spot is being used by residential. The parking is wrong. The traffic flow has not been studied. You keep approving large projects, yet you do nothing towards the infrastructure and nothing to improve the parking. Parking is going to end up on the streets, and we've already got parking lots on the streets. This is another example of why, on an earlier decision you made, I caution you very strongly about allowing CU projects to be approved without a CUP. one planning person approving projects. One planning person.
Excuse me, Mike. Can you put the first slide that you show at the beginning? The one from here. Just for the public, yeah. No, the second. No? The one before that. Where you show the percentages? No, yeah, that one. Good evening. Priscilla Cole, Morro Bay. Today's staff report states that cumulatively, the effect on new residential development requires more cost to serve than is generated by property tax revenues. If we agree that tourism is Morro Bay economic engine, then let me remind you what the tourist loves. They love nature, pristine views, little congestion, peaceful, quaint little town, clean air, moderate temperature, beautiful sunset, ample parking. Previous staff report also states that Main Street is an entryway. So how can you say that this is not a visitor serving area? Bay News reported last February that the campground brings in 80,000 tourists and $10 million in revenues to the city of Morro Bay per year. Visitor serving uses increases our bed tax and the sales tax. Morro Bay gets the overflow of the San Luis Obispo housing market. And Cal Poly is addressing that by adding 800 units every other year with a total of 2,400 new units. Therefore, Morro Bay does not need any more residential units. Last Christmas, a tourist told me that Morro Bay does not look too festive because a lot of homes are pitch black, and that was about 21% of it are vacation homes. So please remember the economic concept of the law of supply and demand. A mind, body, and soul spa rejuvenation would be great for this location. We don't have that in Morro Bay, and yet we have all the natures that completes the package, and all the motels can make packages out of this special service that we can offer. The city must designate and promote the orderly escrow, the other project that was already approved for this developer. Any approval of subdivision development should be consistent with the City of Morro Bay's subdivision ordinances. Otherwise, any inconsistency could also be a violation of the State Subdivision Map Act and therefore could be challenged in court. Please follow our laws. Thank you. And uphold the Planning Commission decision.
Thank you, Priscilla.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, Linda Merrill. Please do not approve this project as designed. The mixed use intent is so that the impact on the neighborhood is minimal. Also, in this location, if you take a look at that four lot piece of land, you cannot imagine this proposed development. Where's the retail? Where's the commercial? The community open space instead of parking, how does that help? Twice as much open space would actually serve the residents there. So please deny the approval, the appeal. Please deny the appeal, uphold the Planning Commission decision. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, Council. My name is Norman McTaggart. I live in Driftwood. I'm back again in opposition of this project, mainly for two reasons. Still, it's the parking and it's the open space. But now I got a third, the retail or the commercial. The commercial space for Morro Bay should be a profit-making for the city. it should bring in some profit for the city. This would be sales tax, TOT tax, something else. And this has none of that. These offices are too small to be anything except a dentist, a doctor, a lawyer, real estate. There's no sales tax in that. It would be far better if they took and redid this, and it's a little late to say it, but put a motel in. It would serve, it would create two, or it would correct two problems. It would get the buildings put farther back. You could put the parking right up in front and rent out. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
My name is Dorothy Cutter. I think you should deny this project. It's not a good mix of commercial and residential. The percentages are not proper. If this could be appealed to the Coastal Commission, I'm not sure whether it can or not, they would certainly deny it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. George Contento, Morro Bay. There's an issue here that we seem to keep facing, which is the residential-commercial issue. And I, in your meeting this week regarding the zoning ordinance, there was a discussion that almost made it sound like there was a Great Depression gripping our downtown business community. So I kind of did my own informal survey of space downtown, drove Morro Bay Boulevard, Main Street, Monterey, Harbor. I'm probably leaving some out in there, you know. There's got to be 50, 60, I don't know, 70 businesses in there. There's an amazing amount of businesses in there. And I found four vacant spaces across from Bank of America, above Fidelity Title, half of the upstairs, coming out the back door of ASAP Printing, facing that commercial building, the back of that, not the front. These are small spaces. The building in escrow, 360 North Morro Bay Boulevard, which probably hasn't, they haven't tried to rent, and then the one across from the Westerfeld Project. What I came away with was a feeling that our residential property managers would love to have this vacancy factor. It's very, very low. The amount of space available downtown is very low, and I think that bodes pretty well for the vacant space across from the Westerfeld Project, which I understand had a tenant, and that fell out. Businesses. That's only going to make it tougher on them. Thanks.
Thank you.
I'm Louise Tucker, and I'm a resident of Morro Bay for 50 years, and I love Morro Bay, but I think this is a nice project. I think we need some low-cost housing, and I think there's enough commercial. As I look around, I see a lot of this kind of commercial available, and I think that most one-bedroom apartments only have one car. They usually have one person using them. Let's have some housing in Morro Bay. I just keep hearing everybody saying, no housing, let's not let anybody build anything. Let's as long as these people are, it's a good project and it looks nice. And I think it would make a good project for Morro Bay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ken Vestavelle, resident, Morro Bay. A couple of the issues that I hope that maybe, I know this will not affect this project this evening, but I hope maybe in the future here that we can have an ad hoc committee from the City Council and get together with the Scenic Coast Board of Realtors and all of the real estate people who are in town here and get a feeling for the calls that come in for commercial space in Morro Bay. Might be a little advice to take to gain some interest and some gain some knowledge about whether there is commercial space needed here or not. A prime example of commercial space on the second floor is the Embarcadero. I'm sure you all go down there and see, and that's where the prime business district, quote-unquote, is for amount of foot traffic, I should say. And it's very difficult for them to do that. We're going to see here in the future about the project across, I think, a 601 Morro Bay Boulevard, how that is going to work for maybe possibly a real estate office on the second floor. And they even have, on the Embarcadero, they have wide stairwells, and an elevator, and still can't get people to transcend up and down. There was one other thing I guess I forgot, but I know it was. Please ask the staff if this project is legal. Please ask the staff if the project requires all these parking. Small offices where people can come in and live and work here. I appreciate your concerns, but please ask staff about the legality of this project. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay, and would the applicant like to say anything in response to some of the comments?
Thank you. Just a couple final comments that were asked. In terms of parking, there's again been a discussion that, again, as the last person said, feel free to ask staff about our parking. We've worked within the confines of Assembly Bill 1818, providing low affordable housing. And as the project stands now, the project is, in fact, overparked, even with the additional recreation area that we are providing as an amenity to offset the open space that we're asking for as a concession. We are not asking for shared parking. That is something else that we could have asked for, but again, the project has been redesigned and retooled such that we're before you tonight where the project does not require any sort of shared parking, mixed-use reduction, that sort of thing. And again, I think I went through, don't want to belabor the issue, but in terms of the project being too dense, we keep hearing that over and over. This project is probably the least dense project that we could have provided here. There was a recent project that was approved, and that was a larger scale project. It was providing more square footage on per square footage of land. This project is quite a bit less dense than that, and I believe that project was approved by this body of 5-0. So in terms of height, density, breaking down of the massing, this is not a dense project in any sense of the word, either physically or by use. And again, just to reiterate on the issue, if it's still out there, regarding the commercial residential mix, hopefully, Mr. Baxter, we touched on that earlier and had a discussion about it. We certainly feel and strongly feel that building flexible space and let the market determine the use, whether it's residential, commercial, or mixed, live, work, what have you, is the best scenario for the city. The worst thing we can do is build speculative projects that sit empty. I think we all agree on that from a developer standpoint and from a city. It's very unattractive for visitors to come in and see what we call see-throughs in any case. So by designing in some flexibility into the project, I think that gives you the flexibility to look at the ratio of the mixed use in terms of giving future users, future tenants, flexibility and whether it's commercial feet of lawn area that we're providing in lieu of hard paved surface area for an additional recreation barbecue type area.
And probably just a little bit smaller because it's really not 10 by 20 parking spaces, is that right?
Correct. However, one thing I didn't point out, the two spaces, there were five spaces along that area. We're keeping the trash enclosure. We're going to give off three spaces for a lawn area. The two remaining spaces, and we're showing it on the plan, we're proposing to provide turf pavers in those two areas. So, again, the idea is that on a Saturday, everyone decides we're going to have a barbecue. Those two spaces are essentially green. If cars are not parked there, that entire area could be used as a green space. You have that area normally Monday through Friday could be parked on, but the proposal for those two spaces is to provide some kind of turf paving so that entire area essentially is a green belt. Again, adding more flexibility if on a weekend a lot of the tenants want to get together and have a barbecue, they can actually have spill out area. So,
thank you.
Okay. Other questions? I have one, which was brought up by one of the people commenting. Was a motel ever considered for this property? And what would be the difference in that as far as development and saleability?
When the applicant approached us, my firm, to do the project, he had already met a couple times with the city. And as you may recall, early on, I had mentioned that the applicant is very exciting for us to have an applicant come in already doing his homework. He came to us and said, I met with city staff, and I said, I have this piece of property. What does the city need in terms of housing? How can I develop a project that would help meet some city goals? And in speaking with staff said, well, it's a mixed-use project. You're going to need to have commercial and residential. But what our housing element is really lacking is small units, workforce housing, those types of things. So we looked at the project initially as it came in. Basically, our door was already decided it was going to be a mixed-use residential commercial type project. From that point on, we were working with the applicant and with staff to determine what were the base needs that the city had and how could this project, in fact, fill some of the policy needs, i.e. of housing, affordable housing, workforce housing, whatever you like, that this project could actually fulfill those needs. So to answer the question, the project came to us, the discussion of a hotel has never been on the table. It's always been something that would fit into the mixed-use designation and zoning, yet provide a diversity of housing type as well as commercial, hence the mixed-use project that you see before you.
Okay, so. And maybe this is a question for Mr. Koss. I'm not sure. Let me know. A motel project, is that something that a developer would do himself, or is that something that a...
Hotel builder. So I think that expertise and experience, coupled with the fact that going to the city, asking staff what is needed to help the city meet some policy issues, all that came together in, again, the project that you see before you today.
Okay. So. Thank you. Any other questions? Nope. Okay.
Great.
Thank you. All right. Any other questions for staff at this point?
I've got a few.
Melody?
I trust that we've all read through this document that we got from Mr. Taft. And I think some of the public comment came up about this Subdivision Act and the number of violations.
Okay.
Do we want to talk about any of that?
Well, the only thing that we need to direct our attention to is the issue of the mix. As far as, because that's what the denial was, and that's what was appealed. If indeed we approve or don't approve that, then going back with those other things, parking, open space, that'll all have to come back with a final project if we approve the mixed use. So really the use percentage, I think, is the issue that we have to deal with.
Yeah, I tried to check today because we've got the old zoning ordinance and the new one. And I think all of us get a little confused about which one we're in. So I saw de novo and on appeal, and I wasn't for sure if we wanted to stick with. But I'm happy to stick with just this one. It could be a shorter discussion.
I mean, I'll look to the city attorney for confirmation of that. But it seems to me that's the issue we have to deal with, right?
That's your preliminary question, is whether the mixed use is acceptable, whether to deny the appeal or uphold it. If you... uphold the appeal, then you could go on to the next issue, which whether the concessions have been met for the open space and for the parking requirements.
Okay, so that's the first thing we have to deal with, and the rest comes after.
And can I clarify, yes, and in dealing with mixed use, whether or not it matches the zoning of visitor serving?
Correct.
Okay, so Melody, did you have other questions other than that one? Or?
No, I think I've got that one.
Okay. All right, so I'm trying to think what my questions are on it. We've got the potential for 3,200 square feet of commercial in the front area. What percentage does that get us to? Is that still going to be under the requirements? He's got his calculator out, yeah.
Just in case you had some math questions for me. Just to reiterate, there isn't a specific percentage target that building. What's the mix within the buildings, or what's the mix within that half of the lot of the park project?
That half, yeah.
24%. If it went to 42. Okay. So it would go from 10% to 24%.
Okay. All right, and then the next thing, commercial in this zone, is this the same as commercial where we dealt with it on Morro Bay Boulevard, or is this slightly different with the visitor serving attached?
It's the same zone district. It's a C1 zone district for commercial. It also has an R4 zone category on top of that, or jointly with that. And it's also added with this general plan mixed-use area A, and that is the piece that was asking for the visitor serving.
Okay. And what does that ask for visitor serving? What should we look for? I mean, I'm trying to get this defined so that we can make
right.
a decision based on what we need to make it on and have everybody understand that.
Mixed-use area A asks for that the primary permitted use be visitor serving,
okay.
and that the secondary use be looked at would be the other commercial and other residential.
And the Colmer project, was that a similar situation or was that different?
That's a similar situation as far as the general plan designation goes. It was also in mixed-use area A. And it was zoned commercial. They rezoned it to residential R2, but they didn't change the general plan of mixed-use area A. So that same language was intact for that project, and that project went 100% residential.
And rezoning was done before the project was brought for approval or during the process?
During the process. That was the first piece to the
But that
the
hasn't
project.
Been considered here.
Excuse me?
But that hasn't been considered here with this project.
No, they're not asking for a rezone because they're trying to add a commercial piece to the project.
Okay, and that's what I'm getting at. The commercial with the visitor serving, does that make it different? Or can it just be commercial, and does the office space solve that?
In staff's opinion, the office space would solve and meet the intent of the zoning.
Okay.
It's not the primary permitted use that we would desire if a project was to come in for visitor serving. Obviously, that would take precedence, and we would love to have that before an office.
The mix of commercial and residential, and that's the key issue here. And as our city attorney indicated, from there, if you're whatever you're comfortable with, from there we can work.
And there's no set percentage that we have to observe.
Correct.
Okay. All right, Betty, you look concerned.
Yeah, for me, it's more than just whether it's commercial. It's visitor serving, which is a different kind of layer. I was involved with the Colmer project, and as we went to the Coastal Commission to ask for the rezoning, it was very much a concern of the Coastal Commission that we were getting rid of visitor serving areas. So to say that overlay may have been gone, they acknowledged that by turning it into residential, that meant it was no longer visitor serving. And their concern was, well, how much visitor serving do you have left then? And they had us count every single piece in town to show that this was not going to be detrimental to us as a community on the coast. And so I am very hesitant to get rid of any visitor serving area. And I believe that it needs to be, if there is residential at all, it needs to be incidental or secondary in its true sense to the area. And so for me, the first question is, does it meet the visitor serving part, not is the balance there?
Dad?
This is comments now, or two other questions?
Well, or questions, either one.
Well, I don't have any more questions, but I'm looking at what staff has put up on the screen here. And if the commercial is, in fact, 10.4%, then I'm not willing to accept that. It's too low.
And if it was 24%?
I'd feel a lot better about it.
Okay. Melody, Phil?
It's not going to be 24%. That's a suggestion, and it's kind of a suggestion coming at a late point, just put up here as a possibility.
Well, we can require it.
I didn't hear that we're going to require it. I think even Councilmember Baxley asked about that. Does the city follow it as the project is built? And we were told no.
By the applicant we were told that, but we can require it. We can say it has to be.
However, another public comment I would probably agree with, and that is that it is tough getting people to go upstairs. I've been down on the Embarcadero. The applicant says the grounds for appeal is that it's within the amounts allowable. we really don't know what that is. I mean, you know, I would think at this point, based on what the Planning Commission said and based on the reason the applicant has sent this appeal to us, that I would make a motion to simply uphold the appeal without prejudice. So we don't want to talk. I would move to uphold the appeal without prejudice. And Mr. Ambrose explained that to me, that that means that the applicant can come back after some further conversation about other concerns we might have. But I think based on the 10% that I can see on the ground, and also the look of it, when I looked at it, it looked a lot like that project that we have discussed up on Main Street next to the coffee house. It looks residential. It doesn't look commercial to me when I was looking at it. So I would make a motion to uphold the appeal without prejudice and then go on with the discussion if council wishes.
Councilman, I believe you need to deny the appeal. The applicant is the one that's brought forward.
Oh, excuse me, to deny the appeal and to uphold the Planning Commission. Sorry. No, there I am trying to do it. To deny the appeal and to uphold the Planning Commission decision. Sorry.
Would you like to continue with discussion before you entertain a motion?
We can, if you want to second the motion, we can have the discussion within that discussion period. That's not a problem.
I'll second it then for
okay.
Discussion.
All right. Let's continue our discussion then. We haven't heard from you, Mr. Pierce.
Well, we, seems to me only a couple of days ago, were concerned that we'd like to get at a minimum 25% out of these mixed-use things. This comes very close. If we could make it 24, I'm not terribly comfortable with 10. I did support it last time, but I do want more. And the other, I have sort of a rhetorical question for ourselves. What would be a good use for mixed for visitors serving there? I mean, anybody wants to jump in? I'd love to know what it is we're precluding. I mean, I know the residents around Colmer's did not want, so many of them didn't really like the idea of visitors serving there. They didn't want another motel. They didn't want a Denny's because it had become and always had been a residential neighborhood. This is a mix.
I don't know that this is a moneymaker, but I've always thought some kind of museum. We've talked about a maritime for a long time and maybe not that particular kind. Maybe a more of a nature museum. Something that would be quiet at night, but would have some kind of liveliness during the day. When I go to visit people in other towns, they have a variety of art museums that have a little cafe attached, something like that, where people would come here to look at something. And so and I think we need to be creative. You know, what is it that we offer that you can't get other places, that we could create something like that around, that would be an additional attraction that would add to enhancing our natural environment. Maybe down in Napomo, they're trying to create a monarch palace. Up here, we could do something with wildflowers or birds or something like that. Not that would compete with the museum, because certainly they have a whole different tone, but this would be an adjunct to that.
Well, the only problem I see with that, and yes, it's a wonderful idea, but usually a museum project or something like that comes from someone who has a lot of funding and specifically will design a building to house their facility. And they're not going to build something like that in this part of town, I don't think, because it's not where the visitors are. It may be in 10 years, but right now it's not. The visitors on the Embarcadero, it's all we can do to even get them up to Main Street. So to expect something like that to, number one, materialize, number two, be designed for, I think is a little bit burdensome, more than a little bit burdensome, on the property owner. I mean, he has every right to make a profit on his property. Mm-hmm. How he makes it is one thing, but to say, you know, it has to be this kind of a use, we can't really do that because there's no way to guarantee that there would be that interest.
Right. I was just responding to a possible suggestion that okay. This is one option. And just to add to that, whether it's that or some other kind of visitor serving, if you put something there that has its own attraction, then other things will build into it. And I think that would be, like, this would be a cornerstone, just like they do those shopping centers. You know, you had your cornerstone stores, and then you add the little guys in between. And this could be something that could be attractive, and then we could feed into it, extend the downtown.
Well, my feeling on it is that the ideal visitor serving use would be either a motel or a bed and breakfast. And certainly to have more rooms available in this town would be an issue. Which, and I have to say, I feel very mixed feelings on all of this, because here's a developer who came to our planning department to ask for advice on what kind of a project we need and what would be good for the city. And granted, that was a year or so ago, and things do change. People change, the goals change. But at the same time, it's almost like we're punishing this guy for actually coming and asking what we need, and then we tell him what we need, and he comes back with it, and it's like, well, we changed our mind. I'm not saying we don't have the right to do that, but it bothers me. It really bothers me. At the same time, I agree. This is, if this had come with a request for a zoning change to just the commercial or just the residential, perhaps that would be different. I'm a little, my concern here is the visitor serving use, and that's being ignored. Offices are not visitor serving in my mind. So I don't know where that goes, but go ahead, Thad.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on the percentage we're talking about here. Your idea is to increase the percentage by changing the use of the second story.
Right.
On the commercial end of the mm-hmm. project. As I stated in an earlier council meeting, I'm happy with the west end of the project. I think that does what he intends to do. I think it looks good. He now has even brought it back within code, which is honorable. And
including the apartments, so the houses in
the apartment. I'm talking about the single-family homes at the west end of the piece of property.
All right.
When you go to the east end of the property, Main Street property, I still like the way it looks in terms of the way it was designed with the commercial on the bottom and whatever is going to be on top. My problem is in the middle. In the middle of this thing, we have two stories of single-bedroom apartments. And it's that area that's causing all the problem in terms of parking. Why do we need 16 of these single-bedroom units? Instead of changing the usage of the second story of the commercial, why not reduce the square footage of the single
places? I think they could probably make the size correct. And
well, all I'm saying is if you simply reduce the residential instead of trying to increase the commercial, you get back to a percentage we can live with, and I think that the developer could then come up with a project that would not be asking for as many exceptions as he's asking for now.
Can I ask yes. for clarification? When you say less, are you mean less number of units or not smaller size units?
Less number of units.
Less number of units.
Reduce so the floor space allocated to that section of the project.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Melanie?
I'm wondering if we could vote on the motion, because it seems like we're now moving to some suggestions and some ideas.
Well, and that's fine. I'd rather, well, I guess, okay, if we vote on the motion, then can we give more guidance to the applicant after the motion? Yes, we can?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Could you
can we restate it one more time?
Yeah.
I make a motion to deny the appeal without prejudice.
Okay, and I want to clarify. What that means is that it would come back to us. It doesn't have to go through the Planning Commission again.
Mr. Ambo?
Madam Mayor, whichever one you wanted, you can send it to the Planning Commission.
Because I don't want to send him all the way back around the merry-go-round again. Okay. All right, so it will come back to us, and we can, after we vote on this motion, if we vote in favor, we can give more suggestions as to how we would like to achieve that. Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay. 4-1, Bill Pierce opposing. All right. Now, let's give him some real strong guidance.
because this is, you know, seven times he's going to be coming at us. Go ahead, Melanie.
Well, first of all, I would like to congratulate them on the west end of the property, as that says it's all within code. They met the setbacks. I'm fine on that side. I'm wondering, though, from the comment that Mr. Koss is a home builder and not a commercial builder, if staff could tell me what the possibility would ever be of a lot split here where he could build his homes and sell the other half of the lot to somebody who might want to do that commercial development.
Yeah, they could do that now if they wanted, if they were proposing. I think it's what they're doing. They're proposing subdivide lots on the westerly side, right, Mike?
Oh, you can see it with my mouse. This line, my mouse, goes right through the middle of this property. That line is the zone boundary line. So where the single family was, that's all the R2. There's also another property line that splits east-west right through.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates four quadrants. The two left quadrants are residential, and the two right quadrants are the commercial.
So they could be developed together or separately?
Or separately.
Okay. All right. If Mr. Koss wants to go ahead and come back with something that we're going to approve on it, what do we want on that east side of the lot? What would be acceptable? The apartments, fewer of them. How many are you looking at? Remember, we've got very low income here, which is an advantage. And you give up number, and perhaps we're not going to have that many low income included.
Well, there's only two now.
Right. So we may lose one of them. If you're asking for 12 apartments instead of 16.
That's a possibility.
And also remember, too, that if you are with the commercial going to the 24%, you're already reducing four apartments over the bottom floor commercial on the front buildings.
I understand, but we keep hearing comments about whether or not second-story commercial is viable there or anywhere.
So you're saying that you have the residential above the commercial but remove it from the apartments?
From the apartments.
Okay, I see. I didn't understand that's what you were
saying.
Leave
the front the same, leave the back the same. It's the center that gets to me.
This part right in here.
It's the right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so do we need to offer a percentage that we're going to accept? Because once we do this, I don't want him to have to go through this again. I want us to be very specific about what we will accept on this project so that he's got a real goal to work towards. And I'm not saying it has to be this building, that building, but we have to give him a percentage.
Well, okay, what's going to be?
I was fighting for that the other night. What would you suggest?
Well, this is the individual working it through, and that's fine. I think that's appropriate.
So, what would you like in a visitor
survey? That's around 25%, which is 2.5 times what he's got now. If you accept the 10% figure that staff gave us.
25% ground floor, you mean? Or
no, 25% commercial floor space.
Wherever he chooses to put it.
Whatever he wants to do.
And we can't just say, okay, fine. We don't like that either. You know, we can't keep doing that to him.
Absolutely we can. Until we get a project that the city of Morro Bay can live with.
Oh, our reputation is in the toilet.
I'm sorry, but that's the way the system is set up.
Okay. So what, 25%? Is that what we're looking at?
That was my suggestion.
And what about the visitor serving? Does this have to be visitor serving? Are we going to accept straight commercial?
Somebody has to explain to me what visitor serving would go there to where it would be successful in the first place.
A motel is about all I can think of, or a bed and breakfast.
Well, I read this thing where a motel at 65% occupancy rate year-round, which is about what we get, would bring in $130,000 of TOT to the general fund. And I start thinking that's real attractive. And if Mr. Koss and his associates don't want to build one, that's why I'm suggesting we'll split the lot and sell that to somebody who might. I was up in Cayucas for the 4th of July looking around, and what they're building in Cayucas is new hotels along their main street. Nice B&Bs, nice looking. They were completely full. They're rolling in some TOT at the county, you know, and that's where, that's the piece of our revenue pie that we don't have to share with other folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can say, okay, it's got to conform to the visitor serving use, but that would also include retail, and I don't think you're going to get a viable retail store there at this point. It's going to be awful hard to get people that far from Main Street. That far from Morro Bay Boulevard for retail. So, okay. We want 25% commercial, one way or t'other, correct?
At least.
And that means also the parking that goes with commercial, which is heavier. Although there may be some reduction on the
question.
Residential. Yes, Bill?
If you go to visitor serving with the idea that you're going to try to suggest a motel there, then you don't want to put your 25% commercial because you won't want any commercial there, will you?
I would assume that a motel is considered commercial, isn't it?
I don't. Is that considered commercial? Yeah. So that,
yeah.
All right.
It's
then
minimum
I'll,
25%.
Yeah, that would be 100.
Yeah. If we're going to ask for the 25%, which I think is reasonable.
I mean, if we're not requiring visitor serving, then why? Well, public hearing's over. I'm sorry, public hearing's over. Why are we doing that then?
Well, I'm in favor of making it visitor serving. I think that's the zoning. That's why we denied it, because it isn't doing visitor serving. We need to retain our visitor serving to be a tourist town.
Mm-hmm.
We can't let it go like that, and we need to be creative. I'm going to throw that back in there. We need something that's going to work for us, that will make our commercial area grow, not be stagnant, but to grow. I hadn't thought about telling someone to sell their property, but it is. I have seen the for sale sign on. I have seen, you know, that maybe he's going to be selling it anyways. I mean, that's what he did with this other property.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not our decision, but it certainly is his decision to work within our parameters.
Well, again, though, if all we're asking for is 25% commercial, I think that we could probably get that concession from them tonight. That I don't think would be that hard to do. If we do want the visitor serving, then that's got to be something that we stress. Bruce, you're looking askance.
You know, it's just the list of visitor serving uses is pretty limited. We really are looking at things that you would normally expect to see on Main Street or the Embarcadero.
Then do we need to rezone?
Well,
to maintain some consistency?
Yeah.
I guess I need to butt in a little bit. It's not zoned commercial visitor serving. This piece of property is zoned commercial.
It
has in our general plan and local coastal plan, which you have to follow, mm-hmm. that the primary use should be commercial visitor serving. In the language that the primary permitted use and the priority for visitor serving. So it's zone commercial, which gives him much broader uses as a zoning mm-hmm. method. But then we stuck in this mixed use A to say, what are we really trying to get there? Mm-hmm. And so your objective is to find out what you're trying to get there. And, you know, in fact, you could even put a one layer on top of another, maybe saying 25% has to be 20% has to be commercial, 5% can be commercial visitor serving, if that's what you think. You know, but don't confuse zoning with land use policies.
Okay.
Zoning is the primary thing where we look, which is more black and say, but you can't put commercial visitor serving now because you rezoned it. So we just had to make the finding that it can't be met because we have rezoned it, even though they were in conflict. But this one is C1, R4. So commercial, we look for use. But then you have this policy that says the primary use should be commercial visitor serving.
So just to zone it commercial, then when a business comes back in, that's when you look at whether it's visitor serving? Or
that's
he
correct.
Has to...
I mean, we don't know what the uses will be at this point in time.
Okay, so that's my question then. What is our requirement as a council to demand visitor serving here? Can we even do that? It sounds... We can, but... What?
Well, we don't have to tell them what.
What are the definitions of visitor-serving businesses?
Mike will go over it, and then I think he can explain the list of permitted uses and perhaps some of the permitted, and compare them to the permitted uses in the base zoning district.
Okay.
And then you can hopefully get a sense of what the difference between the two is. Because there is visitor-serving commercial zoning.
I want to ask a quick question here of you, Mr. Amble or Mr. Prater. When an applicant comes in and they come in with an idea or plan, they say, I own this lot of land. I know you talk zoning with them and what the code is, but do you also talk to them about the coastal land use plan? And was this applicant aware that this was mixed use area A, for example?
Yes. We speak in both languages.
Okay, so in other words, they're aware of our coastal land use plan when they come in.
Okay.
I'll read the purpose of the visitor serving. It's a district intended primarily to serve the needs of tourists and other visitors to the city, not to include commercial uses of a more general nature, which are oriented towards residences. Okay, so the list entails coffee shops, ice cream parlors, boutiques, travel agents, beauty shops, barber shops, things of that nature, gift supplies, boat and marine supplies, museums and galleries and art studios. It even goes to hotels, bars, liquors, taverns, service stations, car washes, fishing supplies, recreational storage.
Before we go any further, I have a question of this council. If 25% commercial would satisfy this group tonight, I think we have I think we should offer that option to the applicant right now. If they will comply with the 25% commercial and that's all we want, then I think we ought to give them the opportunity to not have to come back. Is that something that we would consider?
I just heard the city attorney say that visitor serving should be a primary use, and we're not considering that. I didn't consider it when I made my comment to you about letting it go. I think we need to reconsider it. If we're going to go by what this is zoned,
general plan,
and the general plan, then there needs to be some, I don't know how much, but there needs to be some visitor serving commercial activity on this piece of property, or rezone it.
The commercial space that is available could be used for a beauty shop or a travel agency or things like that. There are those uses that would be appropriate in the office kind of space that they're talking about. Yes, Mr. Pierce.
I was going to say, if you put a barber shop and a beauty shop, that's your visitor serving. I don't know how much business they'd do, but or what that would do for the project. But, I mean, we've been sitting here thinking visitor serving in these lofty terms, but almost anything but an adult store is visitor serving.
Well, I don't know. That probably would be.
Come to think of it.
I want to follow what Thad said and say that I do appreciate the use that we're supposed to give to this from the local coastal plan and the visitor serving. And I think that there's plenty that could be done there. I am concerned, though, with us just sort of accepting it tonight with this upstairs notion that I just heard about in this presentation. I haven't had a chance to sit down and read it or hear what staff says about it or to look at a new drawing or anything. I also am much more interested in what Mr. Baxley was saying about doing something with that back side of the building so that it becomes something that is truly mixed use, where we get a row of businesses along the bottom or bigger areas where people are more likely to visit and go into them, and housing across the top. I think this is a project, at least on this side. Again, the west side is not bothering me, but this commercial visitor serving area does.
The applicant can get, because he'll end up with some commercial spaces there, hopefully retail, and then, you know, you're going to have for rent, and somebody's going to try to handle finding tenants, and then it would be a matter then of going through and trying to decide which of any applicants you may get would be considered visitor serving. And I'm not sure what retail would do there. It's not really something that would lend itself to people walking along up from the Embarcadero or down Morro Bay Boulevard. So I'm not sure in the analysis that we're looking at, I'm not sure that if you stay with the plan you've got that you had the front is commercial and hopefully retail or something of that similar, that if you require visitor serving, I'm not sure literally what you could put in there that would truly be visitor serving or how well you could rent the place.
I have a question for the city attorney. With Coastal Commission and their consideration of what is considered visitor serving, if indeed we said, okay, this is for commercial visitor serving such as beauty shops, travel agencies, and things like that, is that sufficient with them, or are they the ones that are going to say, no, it has to be someplace where a tourist can buy a tchotchke or stay overnight?
I think you're really confusing the issue a little bit here.
Clarify it, please.
I'm trying to, in that I think from the applicant standpoint, you were heading in the right direction on what a percentage should be and not get cut up in the commercial versus the commercial visitor serving so much and see what that percentage is, then get to the commercial visitor serving. You know, I think you need to know a percentage you're looking for. And then I think the market will kind of dictate whether it would be in the commercial visitor serving, and you could put in your findings that priority and the primary use should be commercial visitor serving in your findings, and even put a percentage or the entire amount. But again, I was trying to get the discussion on that the zoning is commercial, but then we've got this local coastal plan that says it's encouraged and its primary is commercial visitor serving, but there's nothing that says you have to have commercial visitor serving. That's not what the policy says, or that we would have zoned it commercial visitor serving. So the commercial does allow them. We didn't read off from the commercial zone, but my analysis of it, it does give them some more options if it's just commercial as opposed to commercial visitor serving. And maybe Mike or Bruce can chime in on it, whether they agree with that analysis or not.
Any chimes? Great.
Take is, and where we're having difficulty with these projects is, you know, what mixture do you want him to have? 25, 35, 45, 50%. You know, that's where I still don't know where the council's at, and I'm sure the applicant isn't to what percentage do you want to see. And then maybe, you know, Council Member Baxley, maybe the applicant will come back with reducing the residential units in the back or putting it upstairs if you don't give any more direction. But if you want specific direction, then the motion would be we want to keep the front apartments and we want the reduction in the back, you know. But you can make motions to get specifically where you want on this project to get it done if you want to get there.
Well, if we were to make the motion that we want 25% commercial and the applicant's out there saying, I can do that right now,
then you could be done with it.
We don't have to bring it back. Right. That's good.
And chances are what he's going to do, and that goes to the question in the motion, it can be that it has to be commercial upstairs, and he doesn't have this option in a year to say, oops, I tried, but I couldn't find anything, so I'm going to make an apartment.
It's going to have to be. Yeah. And he has to provide. Now, will that require more parking? If a commercial is required, does that raise the parking?
Probably.
Okay, so then he would have to bring it back.
I'd like to pursue the idea of my original thought of having the developer reduce the amount of the single-bedroom apartments in the center complex of this site to get to the 25%.
I think that's what we're seeing. We're helping some public comment here, but I think we're seeing somebody out there suggesting that we reduce those 16 down to 12, for example. But we start to improve the percentage by lowering the number of apartments.
Exactly.
And I'd rather that than going for this kind of upstairs commercial that I'm not sure how viable that will be on the front.
Then I would make my suggestion a motion.
Restate it, please.
Require the developer to reduce the amount of square footage in the single bedroom apartments in the center of the complex to the point where he has reached 25% commercial based on the reduction in the residential.
Do I hear a second?
Would you keep that to ground floor commercial? Or do you think we can?
that's where you take the reduction in mass that this thing needs.
If I understand your motion, then you're not counting the second story over the commercial as being potentially commercial, then?
No, because I don't think it's ever going to be in his scenario.
And I think what Councilmember Baxley is getting at is reducing the density and the mass of the project in that apartment part.
Exactly.
I'll second it.
And then discussion, what can we do about ensuring some visitor serving?
I don't think we can. It's not zoning.
Mm-hmm.
It's what we want. We can direct that, you know, they be appropriate for visitor serving uses, mm-hmm. whatever the commercial is. So it has mm-hmm. to accommodate a beauty shop or, you know, whatever. It has to be mm-hmm. able to be used by visitor serving. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we can require those uses to be there, can we?
No, but I think in our findings we certainly can put that in, that priority should be given to commercial visitor serving uses and that we encourage it.
Mm-hmm. I would include that in my motion.
Would you second that?
In a second?
I second it.
All right. I have a problem with the motion in that I don't like the idea of us telling, I mean, I can see, okay, we're going to say we want 25%. And we would rather not have it on the second floor because we don't think that's viable. But I don't want to be telling the applicant how to design his project. I would like to let him come back with, you know, perhaps a couple of ideas rather than us designing it for him. That's not our job, I don't think. We can offer suggestions, but I think we have to leave it up to him to how he wants to bring that back.
And I'd like to know about parking when he comes back.
Well, yeah, he'll have to. When he's got 25% commercial, there's going to be a different parking requirement. All right, any other discussion on the motion? All in favor?
Aye.
And opposed? No.
No.
All right, so that's two. Bill Pierce and myself opposed. Motion passes. All right.
Could I make one more little comment then, maybe to the applicant and to staff, and that is about your concern about the low-income housing. Mm-hmm. This still would equal 5 houses plus 12 apartments, which would give us 17. And if we watch the number of concessions and maybe tell the applicant to watch the number of concessions and make them very clear, look at the parking, that kind of thing, so that we won't have any stopping points when we come back again in terms of the size of the parking places and those things.
Okay.
And may I ask a point of clarification to Mr. Prater?
Target he meets. Mm-hmm. What's the percentage of affordability in the project determines the number of concessions.
Okay. Let's take a break before we get to our next public hearing issue.